Moncrief on News Talk.
Today, the bookshops, of course, will be rammed with shoppers searching for presents, and Kenny's bookshop in Galway will be no exception, except that Kenny's is exceptional. Despite the vicissitudes of the book-selling business, last month, Kenny's celebrated its 85th year as an independent bookshop. Tomás Kenny is the grandson of Des and Maureen Kenny, who first opened the doors in November of 1940. Tomás, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sean.
And congratulations to you on that.
Yeah, thanks for me. I take all the credit.
Yes, well done. And was it originally at the location it's in now?
No, they opened it, as I said, in November of 1940 in a room in High Street in Galway in the city centre. And they kind of expanded, like they leased it, and they started to kind of lease and subsequently buy, you know, above them and behind them and so on, until they ended up with two buildings in High Street, which we closed about 20 years ago and moved out to our current location, which is in Lisbon. It's only about 20 minutes walk from Air Square, but not quite in the city centre anymore.
Yeah. And the original shop, was it a secondhand bookshop?
Yeah, originally they were trying to do anything. It was a secondhand bookshop and the lending library, which was a very popular kind of way of reading at the time, in that people used to literally pay to rent, I suppose, in the same way you used to movies or whatnot from Extravision. And that kind of went away as public libraries became more popular. But yeah, it was secondhand initially, and we only started really doing new books in the kind of late 70s, early 80s. And it was primarily for export to the States. And before we knew it, we were selling them to Irish people as well. Yeah,
yes. Now, originally, was it always going to be a bookshop? Or had your grandparents considered various ideas? Because as I understand, it might have been a fish. Yeah, I might be talking to you today as the 85th anniversary of Kenny's Fish and Chip Shop.
Yeah, my granddad had an idea, all right, to open a fish and chip shop, and we might have been driving nicer cars and so on now, had that been the case with all the tourists there in Galway. But no, my granny really wanted to open a bookshop, and in fairness, my granddad was kind of very arts conscious as well, and that's what they did. I mean, everyone thought they were mad, you know. I mean, outside of World War II, with Galway being the very depressed city that it was then, it did not, and there was already O'Gorman's bookshop, which is now Easton's, was a fabulous bookshop in the middle of the city, you know. So it wasn't like there was an obvious crying need, but yeah, thankfully for us all, they went in the book instead of the yesterday's paper business.
And I suppose that's remarkable, not just the longevity of the shop, but the fact that every few years you seem to have had this philosophy of let's diversify a little. It's all book-related things, but there's so many strings to Kenny's bow now. For instance, bookbinding.
Yeah, well, what happened, I suppose, was my grandparents had six children and five of them went into the business. And emigration being the scourge that it was, you know, to have seven people in the business, and I mean, there was other staff obviously as well, but to keep the kids there, they needed to diversify, as you say. And so they set up a bookbindery, which one son kind of started to run. There was an art gallery, the first art gallery in the west of Ireland in the early 70s or late 60s, which my father started to run, and so on. You know, we did anything and everything, library supply, you know, props for films, anything you could think of to turn a book into a euro, we were doing it.
Yeah, and are you still doing the bookbinding?
Yeah, my cousin Caroline, my uncle retired last year, and my cousin Caroline has taken over the bookbinding business. Yeah, it's an extremely unusual business now, because it used to be very kind of big, you know, business. People, in the same way as lots of other products, whether it's shoes or whatever, people used to fix them and keep them, whereas you know, no longer the case. But so as a result, there aren't very many high quality bookbinders left in anywhere, Britain, Ireland, anywhere. And but yeah, Caroline is flying the flag still for us here.
And I imagine nowadays that arm of the business that you're looking at, old, rare, expensive books that need to be kind of given a bit of TLC.
Yeah, exactly. That's predominantly. But I mean, there's also a lot of, you know, the more practical side of it, thesis binding people getting things like all of their RIP condolence messages or, you know, that sort of thing bound up, you know, that, you know, books of condolence, that sort of thing. There's an awful lot of it, but you're absolutely right. I mean, to do the kind of the finer binding, the leather binding or slipcases, the likes of that, it's yeah, they would do that as well. They'd be an all service bindery, which, as I say, is extremely unusual nowadays.
And the work you do for films, is that kind of like, we have an entire wall here, we want it filled with books?
Oh, like it's the most enjoyable and the most frustrating part of the business, because it's always to a deadline that's unbelievably short and it's an impossible request. So they might ring us on a Monday, somebody, you know, and we'll say we're shooting a movie on, you know, set in 1819 and we need 4,000 books published before 1819 and we need them by Thursday and they all need to be absolutely gorgeous and so on, you know. Or they'll say we're doing Druid Theatre, which obviously is not a film, but a similar sort of idea. They came in several years ago looking for, they were doing a whodunit play and they wanted, I can't remember the number, but about 10,000 books, 5,000 with black spines and 5,000 with white spines that they could alternate on shelves. And of course we said, yeah, God, absolutely. Until you start looking for 5,000 white spines and you realize everything is black. Yeah. And, you know, so it's, but they're always very specific. That sort of kind of prop requests are, you know, very, and like I say, they're always to a deadline.
Yeah. And I suppose, especially when it's a film and they're saying it's before a precise date, there's going to be someone watching that film and closing in on it and going, no, hang on, that one was published 2 years afterwards.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm forever, my wife thinks I'm bananas. We're watching it at home. I'll be eagle-eyed to make sure that we haven't let the side down, as it were, with that sort of thing, pausing and looking at the background to make sure.
Now, whatever about, I suppose, starting a bookshop in 1940 was a bit of a risk. When you went online, you were the second bookshop in the world to do that.
Yeah, 1994, digital closed in Galway, the digital plant, and it was there was an awful lot of very highly educated IT people, and one of them kind of saw the idea of the Ireland Online. He set up Ireland Online, and he came to us and asked if he could set up the website for us, that he could then kind of show to other people. But he knew a lot of our business was export related. So we jumped at the idea. That my uncle, as it happened, had already been looking at it. And the website started, and there was a sci-fi bookshop in San Francisco, which was on a few days before us, I think, but they're no longer in business. So yeah, we're the oldest. And I think I could be wrong, but we're one of the first, I mean, in Ireland, full stop. I think it was, you know, a very small number of businesses. I think we might be the first business, as it were. There might be a couple of the likes of Ireland Online or, you know, the government websites went on first. But yeah, it was a very big change for the business, and has continued to be over the last 30 years. You know, the world changes hugely, but it's kind of equally, it hasn't changed that much. Do you know, like it's still about the more, there was an old story where we bought a Dublin Tobacconist's archive in the 70s, and one of the things he was owed money in 1798 when the French landed in Castlebar. He was owed money by a Castlebar tobacconist, and the Castlebar tobacconist knew that it was likely to get robbed on the road to Dublin, his check. So what he did was he cut it in two and sent it to Dublin. And the tobacconist in Dublin then kind of sellotaped the two together, as it were, and had it. And, you know, in the early days of the internet, that was the same thing. People were sending half of their credit card in one email and half in the second part. And I always think of that story because as the world changes and the books world changes so much, it's in reality, an awful lot of it is we're solving the same problems in different eras.
Yeah.
And, you know, so.
That's mad. Yeah. And nowadays then, proportionately, how much of your business is online and how much of it is physical books?
So about it changes, but about 90% of our business would be through the website.
Wow.
Yeah, and frequently more, depending on the time of the year. Like right now, for example, today, it'll be a very small percentage because everyone has stopped buying, online in the last few days, and the shop itself is very busy, thankfully. But we ship everywhere all over the world, and while we're very, very grateful to everyone in Galway and indeed in Ireland who comes to the shop, the reality is our audience on the website is so much larger, and we can reach so many more people, and we're lucky that it's successful.
Yeah, of course. And would that international trade that you're doing, are they for the most part looking for Irish books?
No, not necessarily. I mean, we do sell a disproportionate amount of Irish books, but we sell literally anything and everything. I mean, we've millions of books on the site, and without being, too kind of salesy about it, like we'd be very competitively priced. So frequently we'd be cheaper than the likes of Amazon and so on, delivered to doors, both in Ireland, but internationally as well. So people have a way of finding, that. So we end up becoming quite popular in countries you wouldn't expect. So Serbia, for example, we sell an awful lot of books to Serbia because the Serbian national newspaper discovered this a couple of years ago and put us on a list, and then we keep getting added to their list of best, international websites to visit and so on. And that happens periodically in different countries around the world, and all of a sudden we'll see an upsurge to South Korea or somewhere. It could be anything. They don't come to the website looking for James Joyce necessarily.
Right. Okay. And at this time of the year, because I remember once somebody telling me that between Britain and Ireland, in the last 3 months of every year, something like 100,000 titles are published. So you can't physically stock all of them.
We do our best. I've more than a million books here in the building I'm standing in now. It is impossible to stock all of that. And neither would you want to, because, obviously some of them are just never going to sell or never going to sell to our customers particularly. But we do our best to have as absolutely wide a range as possible. Because it's our model is this, there are some bookshops that do amazing jobs and they're, relatively small in terms of the square footage. So they have to have, the top 100 bestsellers or whatever. Whereas we here, we have the space to be able to do kind of what we want. So that's part of our thing, is to have as much as possible available.
Yeah. And you've always kind of championed local writers and Irish writers and the smaller imprints. But I assume there's a balance where, you need to kind of a John Grisham in there as well to keep the thing afloat.
There is. Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'd be very conscious. I mean, we're all big readers as well. So, and it's, like the writers are our rock stars. I was more excited when I was a kid meeting Seamus Heaney than I would have been if Bono had walked through the door, And it's because of that, we're very excited, but we're also very conscious, I suppose, that like Ireland, we're so lucky with the publishing and the writing that goes on the island. It's phenomenal. And we sometimes take it a little bit for granted. So we're only still around because there was so much of that to sell, whether it's local history, whether it's, the likes of your more famous Sally Rooney's, Zed O'Brien's, etc. There's a massive variety of stuff available. And, Shantala is a suburb of Galway, and there was a man who wrote a history of Shantala this year. We're getting asked for that more than we are of anything else at the, at the counter this year. And I'm sure, most bookshops around the country will have the same, that's the variety is phenomenal. And so, yeah, we're very lucky that it exists.
Yeah. And now every few years, somebody proclaims that the book, traditional books are dead. A lot of people have said reading is dead, but like things like audiobooks or books on Kindle, as opposed to a physical book. Have you felt any impact from those things?
I think there's a lot of kind of hyperbole around books and reading, and there always has been, I was reading a history of Penguin, the publisher, recently, and they were set up in 1935, and at that point in time, all of the newspapers were saying that it was insane to start a publisher because cinema was going to kill the book, and then it was television, and then it was, and so on. There's always been something. And when you look at the likes of audiobooks or Kindle or whatever, I think a lot of them are bringing new readers in, as well as you know, maybe sure it's taking away a sale from the likes of ourselves or Easton or whoever it might be, but equally it's somebody who's reading who might not otherwise be reading, and who knows, they might buy a book at some point down the line. And yeah, it's great. I mean, you're absolutely right, we do need the likes of the John Grishams or the, you know, 50 Shades of Grey or whatever it is that comes along and kind of massively sells kind of. But the reality is, it's the ones and the twos that are going every day of the year that keep a bookshop going. And again, like, that's where I think Ireland in particular is so lucky, because the backlist, when you go down to our Irish literature shelves, you know, there's 25 of them. They're so massive, yeah, because we've such a depth of, and that's just the fiction, you know, and it's super. So yeah, we're very lucky.
Yeah, and actually, because we were talking about this the other day on the show, that the balance between the sales of fiction books and non-fiction books, has that changed over the last 10 years or so?
Yeah, it shifts enormously depending on the prevailing. I think the political situation has a lot to do with it, you know. So, for example, during COVID, nonfiction sales just dropped off a cliff, and people were interested in, you know, there was a lot of kind of people buying like Dostoevsky and, you know, James Joyce and that sort of thing, that they'd gone, oh, I'll always get around to reading War and Peace, you know, and now I will. But they also didn't want nonfiction because they were so, I suppose, depressed with what was going on outside them with lockdowns and so on. And then that came back in a massive way post COVID. In the last year, again, it's dropped enormously, but it hasn't necessarily dropped as much as fiction has increased hugely. And romanticy, which is the big buzzword in our industry at the moment, that's what's taken over this year. So it's a lot of people, yeah, who would have been buying like the likes of true crime or sport biographies, which have dropped off quite a lot this year. Those people are reading about, you know, romantic dragon encounters and the likes of that.
yes, Randy Elves.
Exactly, and good for them, you know.
Tomás, congratulations again. I look forward to hearing about your centenary when that comes around. That was Tomás Kenny there of Kenny Books in Galway.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.